The Kingbreaker. A pale shadow and a dark. The two conspirators came together in the quiet of the armory on the Great Pyramid's second level, amongst racks of spears, sheaves of quarrels, and walls hung with trophies from forgotten battles. "Tonight," said Skarhaz Mokandak, the brass face of a bloodbat peered out from beneath the hood of his patchwork cloak. "All my men will be in place. The word is Grolio."
"Grolio. That is fitting, I suppose. Yes, what was done to him? You were at court."
"One guardsman amongst 40, all waiting for the empty tabard on the throne to speak the command so we might cut down Bloodbeard and the rest. Do you think the Yunkai would ever have dared present Daenerys with the head of her hostage?"
"No," thought Selmy.
"His Dar seemed distraught. Sham, his own kin of Lorik were returned unarmed. You saw. The Yunkai played as a mummer's farce, with noble His Dar as chief mummer. The issue was never Yerkaz Zoyunsek. The other slavers would gladly have trampled that old fool themselves. This was to give His Dar a pretext to kill the dragons."
Sir Barristan chewed on that. "Would he dare?"
"He dared to kill his queen. Why not her pets? If we do not act, His Dar will hesitate for a time to give proof of his reluctance and allow the wise masters the chance to rid him of the Stormcrow and the Bloodrider. Then he will act. They want the dragons dead before the Volantine fleet arrives."
"Aye, they would. It all fit." That did not mean Barristan Selmy liked it any better.
"That will not happen.
His queen was the mother of dragons. He would not allow her children to come to harm.
The hour of the wolf, the blackest part of night, when all the world's asleep."
He had first heard those words from Tywin Lannister, outside the walls of Duskendale.
"He gave me a day to bring out Aerys. Unless I returned with the king by dawn of the following day, he would take the town with steel and fire, he told me. It was the hour of the wolf when I went in, and the hour of the wolf when we emerged. Grey Worm and the Unsullied will close and bar the gates at first light."
"Better to attack at first light," Skarhaz said. "Burst from the gates and swarm across the siege lines. Smash the Yunkai as they come stumbling from their beds."
"No."
The two of them had argued this before.
"There is a peace, signed and sealed by Her Grace the Queen. We will not be the first to break it. Once we have taken His Dar, we will form a council to rule in his place and demand that the Yunkai return our hostages and withdraw their armies. Should they refuse, then and only then will we inform them that the peace is broken and go forth to give them battle. Your way is dishonorable."
"Your way is stupid," the shave-pate said. "The hour is ripe. Our freedmen are ready, hungry."
Well, that much was true, Selmy knew. Simon Strikeback of the Free Brothers and Malono Yusdub of the Stalwart Shields were both eager for battle, intent on proving themselves and washing out all the wrongs they had suffered in a tide of Yunkish blood. Only Marcellin of the Mother's Men shared Sir Barristan's doubts.
"We discussed this. You agreed it would be my way."
"Agreed," the shave-pate grumbled. "But that was before Grolio, the head. The slavers have no honour."
"We do," said Sir Barristan.
The shave-pate muttered something in Gascari, then said,
"As you wish, though. We will rue your old man's honour before this game is done, I think. What of His Dar's guards?"
"His Grace keeps two men by him when he sleeps, one on the door of his bedchamber, a second within, in an adjoining alcove. Tonight it will be Kraz and Steelskin."
"Kraz," the shave-pate grumbled. "That I do not like."
"It need not come to blood," Sir Barristan told him. "I mean to talk to His Dar. If he understands we do not intend to kill him, he may command his guards to yield.
And if not, his jarl must not escape us.
He will not escape.
Selme did not fear Kraz, much less Steelskin. They were only pit fighters. Hisdar's fearsome collection of former fighting slaves made indifferent guards at best. Speed and strength and ferocity they had, and some skill at arms as well. But blood games were poor training for protecting kings. In the pits, their foes were announced with horns and drums, and after the battle was done and won, the victors could have their wounds bound up and quaff some milk of the poppy for the pain, knowing that the threat was past and they were free to drink and feast and whore until the next fight. But the battle was never truly done for a knight of the king's guard. Threats came from everywhere and nowhere, at any time of day or night. No trumpets announced the foe. Vassals, servants, friends, brothers, sons, even wives, any of them might have knives concealed beneath their cloaks and murder hidden in their hearts. For every hour of fighting, a Kingsguard knight spent 10,000 hours watching, waiting, standing silent in the shadows. King Hesdar's pit fighters were already growing bored and restive with their new duties, and bored men were lax, slow to react.
"I shall deal with Kraz," said Sir Barristan. "Just make certain I do not need to deal with any brazen beasts as well."
"Have no fear. We will have Margaz in chains before he can make mischief. I told you the brazen beasts are mine."
"You say you have men amongst the Yunkish men?"
"Sneaks and spies. Resnak has more."
"Resnak cannot be trusted. He smells too sweet and feels too foul. Someone needs to free our hostages. Unless we get our people back, the Yunkai will use them against us."
Scar has snorted through the nose holes of his mask.
"Easy to speak of rescue, harder to do. Let the slavers threaten."
"And if they do more than threaten?"
"Would you miss them so much, old man? A eunuch, a savage, and a sellsword?"
"Hero, Jogo, and Dario." "Jogo is the queen's blood rider, blood of her blood. They came out of the red waste together. Hero is Grey Worm's second in command. And Dario..."
She loves Dario. He had seen it in her eyes when she looked at him, heard it in her voice when she spoke of him.
"Dario is vain and rash, but he is dear to her grace. He must be rescued before his storm crows decide to take matters into their own hands. It can be done. I once brought the Queen's father safely out of Duskendale, where he was being held captive by a rebel lord, but..."
"You can never hope to pass unnoticed amongst the Yunkai. Every man of them knows your face by now."
"I could hide my face like you," thought Selmy. But he knew the shave pate was right. Duskendale had been a lifetime ago. He was too old for such heroics. Then we must needs find some other way, some other rescuer, someone known to the Yunkish men whose presence in their camp might go unnoticed.
"Dario calls you Sir Grandfather," Scarhaz reminded him. "I will not say what he calls me. If you and I were the hostages, would he risk his skin for us?"
"Not likely," he thought, but he said, "he might."
"Dario might piss on us if we were burning. Elsewise, do not look to him for help. Let the storm crows choose another captain, one who knows his place. If the queen does not return, the world will be one sellsword short. Who will grieve?"
"And when she does return?"
"She will weep and tear her hair and curse the Yunkai, not us. No blood on our hands. You can comfort her, tell her some tale of the old days. She likes those. Poor Dario, her brave captain, she will never forget him, no. But better for all of us, if he is dead, yes? Better for Daenerys, too."
"Better for Daenerys and for Westeros."
Daenerys Targaryen loved her captain, but that was the girl in her, not the queen.
Prince Rhaegar loved his lady Lyanna, and thousands died for it. Daemon Blackfyre loved the first Daenerys and rose in rebellion when denied her. Bittersteel and Bloodraven both loved She-Era Seastar and the Seven Kingdoms bled. The Prince of Dragonflies loved Jenny of Oldstones so much he cast aside a crown, and Westeros paid the bride price in corpses. All three of the sons of the fifth Aegon had wed for love, in defiance of their father's wishes. And because that unlikely monarch had himself followed his heart when he chose his queen, he allowed his sons to have their way, making bitter enemies where he might have had fast friends. Treason and turmoil followed, as night follows day, ending at Summerhall in sorcery, fire, and grief.
Her love for Dario is poison, a slower poison than the locust, but in the end as deadly. There is still a Jogo, Sir Barristan said. Him and Hero, both precious to her grace.
We have hostages as well, Scarhaz Shavefate reminded him. If the slavers kill one of ours, we kill one of theirs.
For a moment Sir Barristan did not know whom he meant. Then it came to him.
The Queen's cupbearers?
Hostages, insisted Scarhaz Mokandak. Grazda and Khazar are the blood of the Green Grace. Mesara is a Merrick. Khesmar is Pal, Azak Ghazin. Bakaz is Lorik, Hisdar's own kin. All are sons and daughters of the pyramids. Zak Quasar, Yulez, Hazkar, Dazak, Yerizan, all children of great masters.
Innocent girls and sweet-faced boys. Sir Barristan had come to know them all during the time they served the Queen. Grazar with his dreams of glory, shy Mazara, lazy Miklas, vain pretty Khesmia, Khesar with her big soft eyes and angel's voice, Dazar the dancer, and the rest.
Children.
Children of the Arpi. Only blood can pay for blood.
So said the youngish man who brought us Grolier's head.
He was not wrong.
I will not permit it.
What use are hostages if they may not be touched?
Mayhaps we might offer three of the children for Dario, Hero, and Jogo, Sir Barristan allowed. Her Grace
is not here. It is for you and me to do what must be done. You know that I'm right.
Prince Rhaegar had two children, Sir Barristan told him. Rhaenys was a little girl, Aegon a babe in arms. When Tywin Lannister took King's Landing, his men killed both of them. He served the bloody bodies up in crimson cloaks, a gift for the new king. And what did Robert say when he saw them? Did he smile?
Barristan Selmy had been badly wounded on the Trident, so he had been spared the sight of Lord Tarwin's gift. But oft he wondered.
If I had seen him smile over the red ruins of Rhaegar's children, no army on this earth could have stopped me from killing him. I will not suffer the murder of children. Accept that, or I'll have no part of this.
Scarhaz chuckled.
You are a stubborn old man. Your sweet-faced boys will only grow up to be sons of the Harpy. Kill them now, or kill them then.
You kill men for the wrongs they have done, not the wrongs that they may do some day.
The Shavefate took an axe down off the wall, inspected it, and grunted.
So be it. No harm to Hisdar or our hostages. Will that content you, Sir Grandfather?
Nothing about this will content me.
It will serve. The hour of the wolf, remember?
I'm not like to forget, sir.
Though the bat's brass mouth did not move, Sir Barristan could sense the grin beneath the mask.
Long has Kandak waited for this night.
That is what I fear. If King Hisdar was innocent, what they did this day would be treason. But how could he be innocent? Selmy had heard him urging Daenerys to taste the poison locusts. shouting at his men to slay the dragon? If we do not act, Hisdar will kill the dragons and open the gates to the queen's enemies. We have no choice in this. Yet no matter how he turned and twisted this, the old knight could find no honor in it. The rest of that long day raced past as swiftly as a snail. Elsewhere, he knew, King Hisdar was consulting with Resnek Mo Resnek, Margaz Olorek, Galaza Galari, and his other Myronese advisers, deciding how best to respond to Yunkai's demands. But Barristan Selmy was no longer a part of such councils, nor did he have a king to guard. Instead, he made the rounds of the pyramid from top to bottom to ascertain that the sentries were all at their posts. That took most of the morning. He spent that afternoon with his orphans, even took up sword and shield himself to provide a sterner test for a few of the older lads. Some of them had been training for the fighting pits when Daenerys Targaryen took Meereen and freed them from their chains. Those had had a good acquaintance with sword and spear and battle-axe, even before Sir Barristan got hold of them. A few might well be ready. The boy from the Basilisk Isles, for a start, Tumko Lo. Black as Maester's ink he was, but fast and strong, the best natural swordsman Selmy had seen since Jaime Lannister. Larrick as well, the Lash. Sir Barristan did not approve of his fighting style, but there was no doubting his skills. Larrick had years of work ahead of him before he mastered proper knightly weapons, sword and lance and mace, but he was deadly with his whip and trident. The old knight had warned him that the whip would be useless against an armoured foe, until he saw how Larrick used it, snapping it around the legs of his opponents to yank them off their feet. No knight as yet but a fierce fighter. Larrick and Tumko were his best. After them, the Lazarine, the one the other boys called Red Lamb, though as yet that one was all ferocity and no technique. Perhaps the brothers, too, three low-born Geskari, enslaved to pay their father's debts. That made six. 6 out of 27. Selmy might have hoped for more, but six was a good beginning. The other boys were younger for the most part and more familiar with looms and ploughs and chamber pots than swords and shields, but they worked hard and learned quickly. A few years as squires, and he might have six more knights to give his queen. As for those who would never be ready, well, not every boy was meant to be a knight. The realm needs candle-makers and innkeepers and armourers as well. That was as true in Meereen as it was in Westeros. As he watched them at their drills, Sir Barristan pondered raising Tumko and Larrick to knighthood then and there, and mayhaps the Red Lamb too. It required a knight to make a knight, and if something should go awry tonight, Dawn might find him dead or in a dungeon. Who would dub his squires then? On the other hand, a young knight's repute, derived at least in part from the honour of the man who conferred knighthood on him. It would do his lads no good at all if it was known that they were given their spurs by a traitor and might well land them in the dungeon next to him. They deserved better, Sir Barristan decided. Better a long life as a squire than a short one as a soiled knight. As the afternoon melted into evening, he bid his charges to lay down their swords and shields and gather round. He spoke to them about what it meant to be a knight. It is chivalry that makes a true knight, not a sword, he said. Without honour, a knight is no more than a common killer. It is better to die with honour than to live without it. The boys looked at him strangely, he thought, but one day they would understand. Afterward, back at the apex of the pyramid, Sir Barristan found Missandei amongst piles of scrolls and books, reading. "Stay here tonight, child," he told her. "Whatever happens, whatever you see or hear, do not leave the queen's chambers." "This one hears," the girl said. "If she may ask..." "Best not." Sir Barristan stepped out alone onto the terrace gardens. "I am not made for this," he reflected, as he looked out over the sprawling city. The pyramids were waking one by one, lanterns and torches flickering to life as shadows gathered in the streets below. Plots, ploys, whispers, lies, secrets within secrets, and somehow I have become part of them. Perhaps by now he should have grown used to such things. The Red Keep had its secrets, too. Even Rhaegar, the Prince of Dragonstone, had never trusted him as he had trusted Arthur Dayne. Harrenhal was proof of that. The year of the false spring. The memory was still bitter. Old Lord Went had announced the tourney shortly after a visit from his brother, Sir Oswald Went of the King's Guard. With Varys whispering in his ear, King Aerys became convinced that his son was conspiring to depose him, that Went's tourney was but a ploy to give Rhaegar a pretext for meeting with as many great lords as could be brought together. Aerys had not set foot outside the Red Keep since Duskendale, yet suddenly he announced that he would accompany Prince Rhaegar to Harrenhal, and everything had gone awry from there. If I had been a better knight, if I had unhorsed the prince in that last tilt, as I unhorsed so many others, it would have been for me to choose the Queen of Love and Beauty. Rhaegar had chosen Lyanna Stark of Winterfell. Barristan Selmy would have made a different choice. Not the queen who was not present, nor Elia of Dorne. Though she was good and gentle, had she been chosen, much war and woe might have been avoided. His choice would have been a young maiden, not long at court, one of Elia's companions, though compared to Ashara Dayne, the Dornish princess was a kitchen drab. Even after all these years, Sir Barristan could still recall Ashara's smile, the sound of her laughter. He had only to close his eyes to see her, with her long, dark hair tumbling about her shoulders and those haunting purple eyes. Daenerys has the same eyes. Sometimes, when the queen looked at him, he felt as if he were looking at Ashara's daughter. But Ashara's daughter had been stillborn, and his fair lady had thrown herself from a tower soon after, mad with grief for the child she had lost, and perhaps for the man who had dishonoured her at Harrenhal as well. She died never knowing that Sir Barristan had loved her. How could she? He was a knight of the King's Guard, sworn to celibacy. No good could have come from telling her his feelings. No good came from silence either. If I had unhorsed Rhaegar and crowned Ashara Queen of Love and Beauty, might she have looked to me instead of Stark? He would never know. But of all his failures, none haunted Barristan Selmy so much as that. The sky was overcast, the air hot, muggy, oppressive. Yet there was something in it that made his spine tingle. Rain, he thought. A storm is coming, if not tonight, upon the morrow. Sir Barristan wondered if he would live to see it. If Hisdar has his own spider, I am as good as dead. Should it come to that, he meant to die as he had lived, with his long sword in his hand. When the last light had faded in the west, behind the sails of the prowling ships on Slaver's Bay, Sir Barristan went back inside, summoned a pair of serving men, and told them to heat some water for a bath. Sparring with his squires in the afternoon heat had left him feeling soiled and sweaty. The water, when it came, was only lukewarm, but Selmy lingered in the bath until it had grown cold and scrubbed his skin till it was raw. Clean as he had ever been, he rose, dried himself, and clad himself in whites. Stockings, small clothes, silken tunic, padded jerkin, all fresh washed and bleached. Over that he donned the armour that the queen had given him as a token of her esteem. The mail was gilded, finely wrought, the links as supple as good leather, the plate enamelled, hard as ice and bright as new-fallen snow. His dagger went on one hip, his long sword on the other, hung from a white leather belt with golden buckles. Last of all, he took down his long white cloak and fastened it about his shoulders. The helm he left upon its hook. The narrow eye slit limited his vision, and he needed to be able to see for what was to come. The halls of the pyramid were dark at night, and foes could come at you from either side. Besides, though the ornate dragon's wings that adorned the helm were splendid to look upon, they could too easily catch a sword or axe. He would leave them for his next tourney, if the Seven should grant him one. Armed and armored, the old knight waited, sitting in the gloom of his small chamber adjoining the queen's apartments. The faces of all the kings that he had served and failed floated before him in the darkness, and the faces of the brothers who had served beside him in the king's guard as well. He wondered how many of them would have done what he was about to do. Some, surely, but not all. Some would not have hesitated to strike down the shaved pate as a traitor. Outside the pyramid, it began to rain. Sir Barristan sat alone in the dark, listening. "It sounds like tears," he thought. "It sounds like dead kings weeping." Then it was time to go. The Great Pyramid of Meereen had been built as an echo to the Great Pyramid of Giz, whose colossal ruins Lomas Longstrider had once visited. Like its ancient predecessor, whose red marble halls were now the haunt of bats and spiders, the Meereenese pyramid boasted 33 levels, that number being somehow sacred to the gods of Giz. Sir Barristan began the long descent alone, his white cloak rippling behind him as he started down. He took the servant steps, not the grand stairways of vein marble, but the narrower, steeper, straighter stairs, hidden within the thick brick walls. 12 levels down, he found the shave pate waiting, his coarse features still hidden by the mask he had worn that morning, the blood bat. 6 brazen beasts were with him. All were masked as insects, identical to one another.
"Locusts," Selmy realized. "Grolio," he said.
"Grolio," one of the locusts replied. "I have more locusts, if you need them," said Skarhaz.
6 should serve. What are the men on the doors?"
"Mine. You will have no trouble."
Sebastian clasped the shavepate by the arm.
"Shed no blood unless you must. Come the morrow we will convene a council and tell the city what we have done and why."
"As you say. Good fortune to you, old man."
They went their separate ways. The brazen beasts fell in behind Sir Barristan as he continued his descent. The king's apartments were buried in the very heart of the pyramid, on the 16th and 17th levels. When Selmy reached those floors, he found the doors to the interior of the pyramid chained shut, with a pair of brazen beasts posted as guards. Beneath the hoods of their patchwork cloaks, one was a rat, the other a bull.
"Grolio," Sir Barristan said.
"Grolio,"
the bull returned.
"Third all to the right."
The rat unlocked the chain. Sir Barristan and his escort stepped through into a narrow, torch-lit servants' corridor of red and black brick. Their footsteps echoed on the floors as they strode past 2 halls and took the 3rd one to the right. Outside the carved hardwood doors to the king's chambers stood Steelskin, a younger pit fighter not yet regarded as of the first rank. His cheeks and brow were scarred with intricate tattoos in green and black, ancient Valyrian sorcerer's signs that supposedly made his flesh and skin as hard as steel. Similar markings covered his chest and arms, though whether they would actually stop a sword or axe remained to be seen. Even without them, Steelskin looked formidable, a lean and wiry youth who overtopped Sir Barristan by 1/2 foot.
"Who goes there?"
he called out, swinging his long axe sideways to bar their way. When he saw Sir Barristan, with the brass locust behind him, he lowered it again.
"Old sir!"
"If it please the king, I must needs have words with him."
"The hour is late."
"The hour is late, but the need is urgent."
"I can ask."
Steelskin slammed the butt of his long axe against the door to the king's apartments. A slide hole opened. A child's eye appeared. A child's voice called through the door. Steelskin replied. Sir Barristan heard the sound of a heavy bar being drawn back. The door swung open.
"Only you," said Steelskin. "The beasts wait here."
"As you wish." Sir Barristan nodded to the locusts. One returned his nod. Alone, Selmy slipped through the door. Dark and windowless, surrounded on all sides by brick walls 8 feet thick, the chambers that the king had made his own were large and luxurious within. Great beams of black oak supported the high ceilings. The floors were covered with silk carpets out of Carth. On the walls were priceless tapestries, ancient and much faded, depicting the glory of the old empire of Gis. The largest of them showed the last survivors of a defeated Valerian army, passing beneath the yoke and being chained. The archway leading to the royal bedchamber was guarded by a pair of sandalwood lovers, shaped and smoothed and oiled. Sir Barristan found them distasteful, though no doubt they were meant to be arousing. "The sooner we are gone from this place, the better." An iron brazier gave the only light. Beside it stood two of the queen's cupbearers, Drakaz and Keza.
"Miklas has gone to wake the king," said Keza. "May we bring you wine, sir?"
No, thank you."
"You may sit,"
said Drakaz, indicating a bench.
"I prefer to stand."
He could hear voices drifting through the archway from the bedchamber. One of them was the king's. It was still a good few moments before King Hisdar Zolorek, 14th of that noble name, emerged yawning, knotting the sash that closed his robe. The robe was green satin, richly worked with pearls and silver thread. Under it the king was quite naked. That was good. Naked men felt vulnerable and were less inclined to acts of suicidal heroism. The woman Sir Barristan glimpsed, peering through the archway from behind a gauzy curtain, was naked as well, her breasts and hips only partially concealed by the blowing silk.
"Eh, Sir Barristan,"
Hisdar yawned again.
"What hour is it? Is there news of my sweet queen?"
"None, Your Grace."
Hisdar sighed.
"Your magnificence, please. Though at this hour, your sleepiness would be more apt."
The king crossed to the sideboard to pour himself a cup of wine, but only a trickle remained in the bottom of the flagon. A flicker of annoyance crossed his face.
"Miklas, wine at once."
"Yes, Your Worship."
"Take Drakaz with you. One flagon of Arbor Gold and one of that sweet red. None of your yellow piss, thank you. And the next time I find my flagon dry, I may have to take a switch to those pretty pink cheeks of yours."
The boy went running off, and the king turned back to Selmy.
"I dreamed you found Daenerys."
"Dreams can lie, Your Grace. Your radiance would serve." "What brings you to me at this hour, sir? Some trouble in the city?"
"The city is tranquil."
"Is it so?"
Hisdar looked confused.
"Why have you come?"
"To ask a question. Magnificence, are you the harpy?"
Hisdar's wine cup slipped through his fingers, bounced off the carpet, rolled.
"You come to my bedchamber in the black of night and ask me that? Are you mad?"
It was only then that the king seemed to notice that Sir Barristan was wearing his plate and mail.
"What? Why? How dare you?" "Was the poison your work, Magnificence?"
King Hisdar backed away a step.
"The locust, that was the Dornish man. Quentin, the so-called prince. Ask Resnick, if you doubt me."
"Have you proof of that? Has Resnick?"
"No, else I would have had them seized. Perhaps I should do so in any case. Margaz will wring a confession out of them. I do not doubt. They're all poisonous, these Dornish. Resnick says they worship snakes."
"They eat snakes," said Sir Barristan. "It was your pit, your box, your seats, sweet wine and soft cushions, figs and melons and honeyed locusts,
You provided all. You urged Her Grace to try the locusts, but never tasted one yourself.
Hot spices do not agree with me. She was my wife, my queen. Why would I want to poison her?
Was, he says. He believes her dead. Only you can answer that, Magnificence. It might be that you wish to put another woman in her place.
Sir Barristan nodded at the girl peering timidly from the bedchamber.
That one, perhaps.
The king looked round wildly.
She's nothing. A bed slave.
He raised his hands.
I misspoke. Not a slave. A free woman, trained in pleasure. Even a king has needs. She is none of your concern, sir. I would never harm Daenerys, never.
You urged the queen to try the locusts. I heard you.
I thought she might enjoy them.
Hisdar retreated another step.
Hot and sweet at once.
Hot and sweet and poisoned.
With mine own ears I heard you commanding the men in the pit to kill Drogon, shouting at them.
Hisdar licked his lips.
The beast devoured Basenna's flesh. Dragons prey on men. It was killing, burning. Burning men who meant harm to your queen.
Harpy's sons, as like as not. Your friends.
Not my friends.
You say that. Yet when you told them to stop killing, they obeyed. Why would they do that if you were not one of them?
Hisdar shook his head. This time he did not answer.
Tell me true, Sir Barristan said. Did you ever love her? Even a little? Or was it just the crown you lusted for?
Lust? You dare speak to me of lust?
The king's mouth twisted in anger.
I lusted for the crown, I, but not half so much as she lusted for her sellsword. Perhaps it was her precious captain who tried to poison her, for putting him aside. And if I had eaten of his locust too, well, so much the better.
Dario is a killer, but not a poisoner.
Sir Barristan moved closer to the king.
Are you the harpy?
This time he put his hand on the hilt of his longsword.
Tell me true, and I promise you shall have a swift, clean death.
You presume too much, sir, said Hisdar. I am done with these questions, and with you. You are dismissed for my service. Leave Meereen at once, and I will let you live.
If you are not the harpy, give me his name.
Sir Barristan pulled his sword from the scabbard. Its sharp edge caught the light from the brazier, became a line of orange fire. Hisdar broke.
Kroz!
He shrieked, stumbling backwards toward his bedchamber. Kroz!
Kroz!
Sir Barristan heard a door open somewhere to his left. He turned in time to see Kroz emerge from behind a tapestry. He moved slowly, still groggy from sleep, but his weapon of choice was in his hand, a Dothraki Arrak, long and curved. A slasher sword, made to deliver deep, slicing cuts from horseback.
A murderer's blade against half-naked foes, in the pit or on the battlefield.
But here at close quarters, the Arrak's length would tell against it, and Barristan Selmy was clad in plate and mail.
I am here for Hisdar, the knight said. Throw down your steel and stand aside, and no harm need come to you.
Kroz laughed.
Old man, I will eat your heart.
The two men were of a height, but Kroz was 2 stone heavier and 40 years younger, with pale skin, dead eyes, and a crest of bristly red-black hair that ran from his brow to the base of his neck.
Then come, said Barristan the Bold.
Kroz came. For the first time all day, Selmy felt certain. This is what I was made for, he thought. The dance, the sweet steel song, a sword in my hand and a foe before me. The pit fighter was fast, blazing fast, as quick as any man Sir Barristan had ever fought. In those big hands, the Arrak became a whistling blur, a steel storm that seemed to come at the old knight from 3 directions at once. Most of the cuts were aimed at his head. Kroz was no fool. Without a helm, Selmy was most vulnerable above the neck.
He blocked the blows calmly, his long sword meeting each slash and turning it aside. The blades rang and rang again. Sir Barristan retreated. On the edge of his vision, he saw the cupbearers watching with eyes as big and white as chicken eggs. Kras cursed and turned a high cut into a low one, slipping past the old knight's blade for once, only to have his blow scraped uselessly off a white steel greave. Selmy's answering slash found the pit fighter's left shoulder, parting the fine linen to bite the flesh beneath. His yellow tunic began to turn pink, then red. "Only cowards dress in iron," Kras declared, circling. No one wore armour in the fighting pits. It was blood the crowds came for, death, dismemberment, and shrieks of agony, the music of the Scarlet Sands. Sir Barristan turned with him. "This coward is about to kill you, sir." The man was no knight, but his courage had earned him that much courtesy. Kras did not know how to fight a man in armour. Sir Barristan could see it in his eyes, doubt, confusion, the beginnings of fear. The pit fighter came on again, screaming this time, as if Sarn could slay his foe where steel could not. The Arrack slashed low, high, low again. Selmy blocked the cuts at his head and let his armour stop the rest, whilst his own blade opened the pit fighter's cheek from ear to mouth, then traced a raw red gash across his chest. Blood welled from Kras's wounds. That only seemed to make him wilder. He seized the brazier with his offhand and flipped it, scattering embers and hot coals at Selmy's feet. Sir Barristan leapt over them. Kras slashed at his arm and caught him, but the Arrack could only chip the hard enamel before it met the steel below.
"In the pit, that would have taken your arm off, old man."
"We are not in the pit. Take off that armour. It is not too late to throw down your steel. Yield."
"Die," spat Kras,
but as he lifted his Arrack, its tip grazed one of the wall hangings and hung. That was all the chance of Barristan required. He slashed open the pit fighter's belly, parried the Arrack as it wrenched free, then finished Kras with a quick thrust of the heart as the pit fighter's entrails came sliding out like a nest of greasy eels. Blood and viscera stained the king's silk carpets. Selmy took a step back. The long sword in his hand was red for half its length. Here and there the carpets had begun to smoulder where some of the scattered coals had fallen. He could hear poor Kezza sobbing.
"Don't be afraid," the old knight said. "I mean you no harm, child. I want only the king."
He wiped his sword clean on a curtain and stalked into the bedchamber, where he found Hisdar Zolorik, 14th of his noble name, hiding behind a tapestry and whimpering.
"Spare me," he begged. "I do not want to die."
"Few do, yet all men die regardless." Sir Barristan sheathed his sword and pulled Hisdar to his feet.
"Come, I will escort you to a cell."
By now the brazen beasts should have disarmed Steelskin.
"You will be kept a prisoner until the queen returns. If nothing can be proved against you, you will not come to harm. You have my word as a knight."
He took the king's arm and led him from the bedchamber, feeling strangely light-headed, almost drunk.
"I was a king's guard. What am I now?"
Miklas and Drakas had returned with Hisdar's wine. They stood in the open door, cradling the flagons against their chests and staring wide-eyed at the corpse of Kras. Kezza was still crying, but Yazin had appeared to comfort her. She hugged the younger girl, stroking her hair. Some of the other cupbearers stood behind them, watching.
"Your worship," Miklas said, "the noble Reznak Mo Reznak says to tell you, come at once."
The boy addressed the king as if Sir Barristan were not there, as if there were no dead man sprawled upon the carpet, his life's blood slowly staining the silk red.
"Skarhaz was supposed to take Reznik into custody until we could be certain of his loyalty. Had something gone awry?"
"Come where?"
Sir Barristan asked the boy. "Where does the seneschal want his grace to go?"
"Outside."
Miklas seemed to see him for the first time.
"Outside, sir, to the terrace, to see."
"To see what?"
"Dragons. The dragons have been loose, sir."
"Seven save us all," the old knight thought.